Welcome to Freshfire's weekly podcast.
Oh, any good? Nobody hear that? Any good?
Yeah.
He's mint. And you know, I thought that, I still think God's mint, but this morning when he said to me, when he woke me up at 4 o'clock and said, I don't want you to write notes, I just want you to put a Bible verse in. I'm like, really? God, we're not really mastered this preaching malarkey. You want me to just go off a few verses? He went, yep. He said, because it's not written. And you need to remember this. What's written in on the pages of a book is actually written in your heart. He said to me, it's alive on you. Don't read it out of a book and make it be dead. It's alive in you. So we're going to look at a couple of different verses, but the first one that he's tattooed this on my heart, and it's Hebrews 11, verse 1. It says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Wowzers. Hope is the substance of things hoped for. That doesn't, if you look at it, it kind of doesn't make sense, because you could say, well, I've got faith I'm going to win the lottery because I hope for it. I hope I'm going to win it. So that's faith. Absolutely not. That's not what it is. You see, where it says hopes, what it actually means is there's an assurance. I know because I know because I know. You see, when we were kids and when I used to do youth groups, there's a game that we used to play, and it's shut your eyes and fall backwards and hope someone catches you. Now, if I've got somebody here and I'm stood next to them and say, fall back, I'm going to catch you, you've kind of got this assurance that I'm right there. But if I stand you over there and I stand over here and go, going to catch you, fall back, you'd be like, not a chance. Because you haven't got that assurance. But you see, in God, we have an assurance all the time. He's our daddy. He's our daddy. And we can rely on him. You see, there's a couple of people that we're just going to touch on very slightly, but then we're going to the main text, of people who gave in faith. I mean, if you read Hebrews, it goes through loads of people that gave in faith. But there's two that I particularly like, and one is Abel. And he came to God and gave an offering, and his brother gave an offering, but God looked favorable upon Abel's offering. And I'm like, why? Why? So he got me thinking. You see, he gave a lamb, and lamb offerings were usually females. So what he was actually saying to God was, here, God, I'm going to give you something. I can't reproduce after this. There's an assurance of God to be on you now. Because I've already got male lambs left. The female lamb is what gives me stuff going forward. So my reliance isn't on what I've got. My reliance is on you. So I'm going to give away the bit that could produce stuff going forward. And then you've got, I spoke about this with Grace last night, you've got the widow with her two mites. And she goes and she gives them. And what I think is amazing, Grace said this last night, was she's got two. We're called to tithe 10%. She could have put one in, which was a 50% tithe. That's a blooming good tithe. 50% of what she had. But she didn't stop at that. What she said was, I've got faith, God, that you provide. I've got faith that you're bigger than my lack of. Here's everything. So my security now isn't in the fact that I've got money to go and buy food. My assurance is in you. My assurance is in you. So that brings us to my main text, really, of what I want to have a look at this morning. And God's been kind of flipping my switches all week on this. And it's a passage that, when we think about it, when it comes to being taught Bible stuff in school and growing up, I think these two stories, they don't seem to get put together, even though they are together. We seem to think of them as two separate stories. And I'll show you in a bit why they are so closely linked. So it's from Mark 5, verses 21 to 43. And it's titled in my Bible, Jesus heals in response to faith. So we'll start reading. It says, Jesus got into the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake when a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, who was named Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. My little daughter is dying, he said. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she can live. Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding him around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors. Over the years, she had spent everything that she had to pay them, but had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe, for she thought to herself, if I can just touch his robe, I will be healed. Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized it at once, that healing power had come out of him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched me? His disciples said to him, look at the crowd pressing against you. How can you ask who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell at her, to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over. While he was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, and they told him, your daughter's dead. There's no use in troubling the teacher now. But Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Just have faith. Then Jesus stopped the crowd and wouldn't let anyone go with him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw much commotion and weeping and wailing. He went inside and asked, why all the commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead. She's only asleep. The crowd laughed at him, but he made them all leave. He took the girl's father and mother and his three disciples into the room where the girl was lying. Holding her hand, he said to her, I can't say that. Talitha, that's what he said, which means little girl, get up. And the girl, who was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around. They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. Jesus gave them strict orders not to tell anyone what happened, and then he told them to get her something to eat. Wow. Wow. Where do we start pulling this apart? Where do we start? Because they are so intertwined. It is unbelievable. So intertwined. See, firstly, you've got Jesus getting off the boat. And it says immediately when he got there, Jairus, a desperate father, met him and pleaded, come and lay your hands on my daughter because she'll get healed. You see, there's something about Jairus that we've got to remember. He was a Pharisee. So he was part of the exact group that was looking to kill Jesus, to shut him down. But he was so desperate as the dad He'd heard all the amazing stuff that Jesus was doing. You see, he was at the top end of the social ladder. Pharisees were almost celebrities in their time. So you've got a man who fought through the crowd and probably used his position of standing in the community to get to the front of that crowd. Get back. Do you know who I am? Get back or I'll have you arrested. I'm going to the front. I'm getting there first. And he pushed his way to the front. And as soon as he landed, Jesus, come and lay hands on her. She'll get better. I know she will. And Jesus just said, let's go. You lead, I'll follow. So you've got a guy who is top of the top approaching Jesus. And now let's have a look at the woman. She was the lowest of the lowest of the low. You see, she had a bleeding problem for 12 years. In Leviticus, I think it's Leviticus 5:19, it tells you all about women who basically bleed and have discharge and that they are classed as unclean, completely unclean. So you've got a woman in society who will look down upon at that time anyway. You've got a woman who's classed as unclean, who, let's face it, a husband wouldn't have, if she was married, a husband wouldn't have gone near her because she's unclean. Her children couldn't eat food that she prepared because she was unclean. Anything she sat on was marked. Anything she went to sleep on was marked. And it was a constant reminder, you are dirty, you are not clean. And one of the things that of people that were unclean back then, their journey was to get clean. That was their constant journey. There's rituals of 7 days passing and sacrifices and that to get back to clean. And you were not allowed to approach what was holy. You weren't allowed. If you were unclean, you couldn't approach what was holy. So now we've got Jesus walking through the crowd. She spent probably hundreds, if not thousands of pounds in today's money on trying to sort this issue out. Everything she had, she wanted to sort it out. So what happens? She approaches the holiest person on the planet. She approaches Jesus. You see, about Jesus, he was a level 5 rabbi. You see, as rabbis came up through the preschool, there was levels, and Israel hadn't seen a level 5 priest for over 400 years. And Jesus was now that high up. He was a level 5 priest. So she is going for the top. But what she did was, I can guarantee you, that woman was covered from head to toe. Her shame. She didn't want to be seen because just as much as Jairus was known to all of the community, she would have been known to all of the community. Don't let her near you because she's unclean. Don't let her come anywhere near you because she's just not worthy. So she would have been covered head to toe. And she thought, I'm not allowed to approach what's holy, so I won't touch Jesus himself. But if I can just get to the edge of his garment, if I can just get something that's connected to him, it'll bring me restoration. It'll heal me. I know it will. So we see is she pushes through and she pushes and she gets there. And this is how I picture it. There would have been a humbling of herself to get down to the edge of his garment. And she reached out and touched it. So we've got Jairus, who has asked the Holy of Holies to come to his house and lay hands on his daughter. And now we've got a woman who's coming to lay her hands on Jesus. She's coming. The risk of humiliation. The risk of being exposed. But bends down to touch the edge of his garment. And Jesus immediately stopped. What? Who touched me? Who touched me? Who's ever been in a large crowd? Anyone been in a pub or a football match or anything like that? Sorry, mate. Excuse me. Sorry, mate. Sorry, I didn't mean that. Sorry, mate. That's what it is. You feel like you've been at the Dodgems because you just keep getting bumped around and it's like, sorry, mate. Don't want to do that. It's like you're dancing with people. So Jesus is in this environment where everybody wants a piece of him. He's almost the celebrity of the day. Everyone would have been, and you know what? Well, I think this. They would have been purposefully touching him. It wouldn't have just been, they would have been, Jesus, come here, Jesus, come here. But what he did, he recognized one touch. He recognized one touch. You see, what he did, what he did was, she came to him in private. She didn't want anyone to see, but he wanted the world to see her. He wanted the world to see her. Because he turned around and said, your faith has healed you. You're healed. Daughter, your faith has healed you. You know he only uses the word daughter twice in the Bible? Once there. Why? Because he just said, you know what it is to come and take from my house because you are my child. You know what it's like. You see, my kids... Well, not so much my kids, but they should be allowed to go in the fridge and take what they want. This girl, this woman, knew that she was allowed to go in the fridge and take from daddy's supply. She knew she was a daughter. She was an heir. So what he did was, he said, right, I want everyone to know now that you're clean. Because everyone knows you're unclean. So that was shameful, that you thought was an outcast, I'm going to exalt. I'm going to take it from obscurity and put it into prominence. See, that's got what God wants to do with our lives. He says he takes the secret things and makes them public. Oh, amazing. So now you've got this woman who's clean. She's been affirmed in her identity. Jairus is probably pulling his hair out. You said you'd come with me. You said you'd put your hands on my child. You said, come on, come on. Then all of a sudden, someone comes to him and says, Jairus, don't bother him anymore. She's dead. And I can only imagine what went through his heart there and then. But Jesus turns around to him and says, Jairus, I've got this. Don't worry. Just believe. Have faith. Now I look at it like this. Jairus has put everything on the line as his status. He's put everything on the line because when you look, his messengers, so his servants, knew where to find him. They knew where to go. They weren't around looking for him. He says they went to him and found him. That says to me that he told anyone who would listen, I'm going to Jesus about this. I'm going to Jesus about this. And that's a real challenge. Because how many times do we hide behind other stuff rather than saying, letting it know, my dad's got this problem. My dad has got this issue. You see, Jesus was so gracious with the woman that even after she tried everything that was not God, everything that was not God, he said, I've still got you. See, how many times do we fondle around looking for fixes to problems that don't include the Father? But he's so gracious that when we bend our knee and come to him and say, you're my source, he can't help but give. He can't help but be a loving dad. So now I'm thinking about, as a father, as I know, as a dad, I'm walking home being told that my daughter is dead. But who's walking next to me? The life giver. Life himself has got my back. Life itself is walking with me. It's not a somber moment. Life itself is coming to my household. Life itself is coming to resurrect something that's dead. So we get to the house. And I can't imagine what it would be like in there. I can't imagine the emotions, the feelings, everything that people are going through. And they say, she's dead. There's no point. And what Jesus does is he goes in with the mother and the father. And he closes his eyes, goes into the room, puts out his hand and says, little girl, get up. It's time to arise. And she gets up. You see, as with the woman, what he did was he took obscurity to prominence. What he did with Jairus, he went from prominence to intimacy. He took him from a public show, from a public place, and said, no, today I'm coming to your house. Today, your daughter and your household are going to encounter with life itself. And he rose her from the dead. And you know, as well, when it comes to things written in the Bible, I don't think anything's there by mistake. I don't. So there's something that just seems to correlate very, very well. The woman was bleeding for 12 years. The little girl was 12 years old. And you might think, oh, that's just a nice little consequence. Isn't that lovely? She's 12 and that was 12. Oh, isn't that lovely? 12 represents the government of God. 12 represents the divine number of government for God. 12 disciples, 12 cornerstones. When 12 shows up, it means business. So you know what I think? I think daughter and sonship is the cornerstone of God's governance. Daughter. Oh, daughter, today I call you. You see, it's all based on sonship and daughtership. Because what they did, they withdrew a deposit from their inheritance. You can't do that if you're orphan. You can't do that if you're not willing to reach out. You see, it took both of them to go to God. One went publicly, the other went and reached out. You see, I think they both these people somehow knew the understanding of what it says in Psalm 46, of be still and know I'm God. I think they got it. So for me, there's a challenge today. There's a challenge. And it's twofold. One is, have you got a dream, a desire, something that was a promise of God? Because I'm sure Jairus' daughter was a promise to him that's dying, that's completely lost its life. And it's on its last legs and you're like, God, I know this was your promise. I know this was your desire. But it's dying. I need you to come and put your hands on it. You see, there's a question. As I was Googling a lot of this, there was a question. It says, why did he let him die? Why did he let her die? Jesus can't raise something that's not dead. It has to die first. If something's still got a breath in it, it can't be raised from the dead. It can be revived. Now, sometimes something being revived isn't good enough because it's damaged. If you speak to people who are in the medical industry, after the brain hasn't got oxygen for 3 minutes, you can be brain dead. But you can revive that person. You can revive them. But the reality of it is, there's probably something damaged and hurt in there that will never be restored to its fullest. But when it's dead, that's when God can do his amazing work. That's when it doesn't have to be revived. That's when it lives again. And secondly, if you got something that's shameful, something that you said, I've got to keep this covered up because I can't let other people see it. I can't let other people see it. But the reality was this, everywhere she went, there was probably a part of her left there. You see, it says in another version that God turned off her fountain. And that the root word to fountain is to gush. So everywhere she went, there was probably a resemblance of her left there. So is there a part of you that you think, I just don't want anyone to see this. I'm going to cover it and I'm going to come so meek and mild to Jesus. But that's the important thing. You come to Jesus. And as you reach out your hand and say, I feel so ashamed right now. I'm not going to try and touch you. I'm going to try and go for the edge of you. But when I do that, he turns around and makes a fuss out of you. He turns around and says, welcome home. Welcome back. Oh, I've waited for you. Look, everybody. Look, everyone. It's my daughter. It's my son. They're home. And I want you all to see that she's clean. I want you all to see that in my eyes, she is now pure. You are pure, covered by his blood. You see, when it comes to that with shame and fear, they both had to deal with shame and fear on that day. They both dealt with that. But look at Jesus himself. As we sang earlier, he was there alone on the cross. People looked at him full of shame. His disciples looked at him full of fear. But God let him die to raise him from the dead. To raise him from the dead. And that we can now, we can secure our hopes to Jesus Christ. So let that stand. Let's keep our eyes closed. Let's stand because we're going to have an activation here. You see, for some people, like Jairus, you need to take a step. You need to take a physical step towards Jesus and say, do you know what, God? I've got something that's dead that needs rising. Something dead that needs rising. And for others, there's going to have to be a physical reach. Jesus, I need to touch you. I need to make a deposit. Take something from the inheritance account that you've given me. So if you've got something like that, I want you to reach out. Reach out and touch his garment. Reach out and touch the anointed one. Or if you've got something that is dying, something that you think he's just gone and there's no hope, take a step towards him. Take a step and say, today I'm coming to the water's edge to meet Jesus at the side of the water. And today he says, I'm coming to your house. Let's go. So let's just take a moment. And if you feel led, do one of those. know, once I went to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. I went in, and if I'm being honest, I was very underwhelmed. And I sat on this bench and I looked up and I thought, really? Is this it? And then I spent some time just looking at the pictures and the paintings. And the one where God reaches out to touch man, it really captured my heart, because God was at full stretch. He couldn't go any further. He was literally straining his arm and everything in him to touch Adam. And Adam's arm was bent, his wrist was limp. You see, it was right there in his grasp. All he had to do was extend the arm a couple of inches and he was back in contact with his Father. Don't have your arm crooked to him this morning. He wants to walk with you in the garden in the cool of the day. He wants to hold your hand and go, don't leave your arm crooked. This morning, we just want to thank you. We thank you, Father, because of what you did on the cross. Takes away all fear, takes away all shame, takes away all our uncleanliness, Father. And you robe us as sons. You put a ring on our finger and give us your authority, Father, of the house. And Father, I thank you that we can come to you boldly. I thank you for your tenderness, Father. You are awesome. You're an amazing daddy, and we love you.